as we see gay folks living longer. There's a newfound appreciation for silver daddies and even grandpas as sex symbols. But even though Dwayne Johnson and Paul Mason make aging look delicious, getting older isn't always as sexy as it looks. Your back hurts, your dick don't work, and the text size on your phone is now set to billboard.
Today, gay publishing pioneer and now comedian Louis Weisberg joins us to look at aging and raging gracefully. What are the never-ending ways your body betrays you and how to ride the rapids when going into your golden girl's years?
Plus, a medical fetish site donates disposable scrubs to the UK's national health system.
Queen Elizabeth is doing fine, despite the rumors.
And film and music studio executive David Geffen gets slammed online, not by Keanu Reeves, after flaunting his $500 million yacht in a coronavirus stay safe Instagram post. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion, and this is Feast of Fun.
Hello.
Hi, is this Louis Weisberg?
It is.
Hi, Louis. It's Fausto.
And Mark from Feast of Fun. How are you doing?
I am doing great. How are you guys doing?
You're doing okay with the self-isolation?
Well, you know, it's not a lot of fun, but I have my husband here, and if one of us doesn't die of COVID-19, one of us is going to die by homicide, I think.
Are you getting on each other's nerves?
Of course. What's a husband for?
Well, Mark, have you and I gotten on each other's nerves more often than normal during the coronavirus pandemic?
I'm not sure if it's more. I think it just adds a different layer to it. It's a different flavor of being annoyed than anything.
Yeah.
See, the thing about it is, and we're going to do this on the show later this week, we're getting a comedian who was in prison. Not for stealing people's hearts, but for actual crimes. And she is going to come talking about how being isolated during the coronavirus is very much like being in prison. And in a lot of ways, for people who are in relationships with their spouses and live together, their spouse, their lover, is now their prison cellmate.
Or warden.
Or and you
if
and your
you're
husband
good to mama, mama's good to you.
And so you and your husband Louis, you guys have what I call a Liz Taylor marriage, where you have adjoining apartments that are connected in the middle.
Yes, we do. Well, we have when we first started dating, he was moving back to his hometown, which is Kenosha. Yeah. From Texas. When we met and started dating, he was here all the time, so the apartment next door was available, so he rented it. So then I realized that in many, many years ago, it's an old building, that the two apartments were connected, so the landlord let us take down the that wall, and now we're one big apartment.
Oh, wow. So this is where you guys are going to be spending the rest of your lives in this apartment.
Yeah, both
hopefully
weeks.
Longer than
which could be years or days. No.
And so how is your husband driving you up the wall?
Well, he's a contrarian.
Oh.
And if I say something, it's automatically, no, 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 it's wrong.
Oh, and I if wonder he what says that's something, like.
And if he says something, I automatically say, no, 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 it's wrong. Not because I'm a contrarian, but because I think he doesn't have correct information. But those are where the arguments kind of start. But, you know, we don't let him go too far. He changes the subject. He's very good about that. He just completely changes the subject. In fact, he pretends like I'm not even there.
Oh, shit.
Which, as you know, Fausto, is pretty hard to do when I'm in the room.
You take up a lot of space, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Well, mental space.
My mother describes it as I'm pesky.
Oh, that's cute.
That I'm asking too many questions. Just let her be. Let her breathe a little bit.
Yeah, that's something like what's going on here with him. He's just like, you know, leave me alone.
And so what are you doing to pass the time?
Well, I am. I was the publisher of the Wisconsin Gazette for 9 years, and we went out of business, and we closed it down in 2018.
Yeah.
And now the other alternative papers here are shut down too. So it's really very sad.
Mm-hmm.
But we never got rid of the website. So the website's just been sitting there and people still visit it. I don't know why. So I'm probably going to revitalize it. But I've also gone back to when I was young, very young, like, you know, like in my 20s, I used to pursue acting and directing and writing and stuff like that. And I thought, well, I'm retired and I have time. Maybe I'll become a stand-up comic and see if I can get some parts. You know, there's so many streaming shows and everything. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm a character type, right?
Yeah,
and, absolutely. So I did, I don't know how to, I'm not good in front of the camera. Well, I'm getting better. I started taking a workshop and I've gotten better. And I got some, I don't know, some, I guess it's an agency. After my audition, the director said, you really should go take some acting lessons. So I was surprised when they contacted me and asked me to sign up. And so maybe he was just a bitch, who knows. But anyhow, this is a good one. I got I finally got a message from them today asking me to audition by, they call it eco auditioning, where you do an audition by, you tape yourself.
Sure.
They send you a script and somebody else reads the other part and you tape yourself doing it. So, but it's, I looked at the role, it's for a transgender man, 25 to 50.
This is perfect for you.
It's like, I know I look younger, but you know, I can't go under 50. And I'm not transgender. Of course, there's no way they could know that unless I pulled my pants down, I suppose. And let me tell you, the way my dick has been these days, it really might as well not be there.
What's going on?
Besides the ethics aside of taking the role from an actual transgender actor.
Yes, yeah. Right. Yeah.
To clarify this, Lewis is not a person who would do that. Just
no,
to
let I wouldn't.
The audience know before. Put your pitchforks down.
Well, it depends on the role and how much you paid. No, I'm just kidding. I would never do that.
You're not Jared Leto.
He was so good, though. That was really weird.
Yeah.
Weird how good he was.
So your dick's not working.
Yeah, you know, I'm really getting sick of it. You know, it's like we don't get along anymore. I mean, we had so many adventures together and so much fun together. And now, you know, I'm getting older. I'm getting old. In fact, I am old.
How old are you?
I will be 69 years old on May 3rd.
Oh, wow.
Can you believe it?
I knew you when you were in your 50s. Yeah.
I think it was 40s. When did I, what year did I meet?
I met you in 1999. I think it was.
That was, I was still in my 40s.
Yeah.
I was so young.
Oh my God. You're the age now that I am now. Oh my God. I'm so fucked.
You have no idea. And you know what? When you ask old people how they're doing and they say, oh, I'm doing great. They're lying. They are lying. I mean, all I do is go to doctors. I need a case manager. You know, I mean, if you look at, but not right now, actually I'm doing this week, I'm doing a Skype with my doctor because, you know, I can't go to his office. But yeah, it's just everything starts falling apart. So,
what do you do with your dick's not working? Like it just doesn't become erect?
No.
Are you just not interested in sex? Is it like, what's going on?
No, it's just like, it just doesn't want to get up anymore. It's like, just wants to lie there all the time. I guess its bed is my balls, but it just wants to lie there. It just won't get up. I've done a lot for my dick too. I mean, when he got syphilis, I call him Little Louie, by the way. But when he got syphilis, I took the shots, you know, and those things hurt like hell. You know, I'm the one who took them, but he just doesn't want to do it anything anymore.
Have you tried
anymore.
Coaxing him?
I've tried all kinds of things. But the other thing is he doesn't want to pee either. He just does not want to pee. So all night long, all I do is here's what happens, yeah. As you guys will find out. When you get older, your prostate, you know, this was intelligent design. Your prostate keeps growing, like, and your urethra goes around it. And as it grows, there's less and less space for your piss, right? So I had this procedure. So old men get up all night and they stand there. You know, I would go to a bathroom And I'm standing at a urinal, and I'm just standing there and standing there and standing there. And after a while, I'm thinking, people must think I'm cruising or something, but it just nothing would come out. So I went and got this procedure. Do you guys want to hear about this? It was gnarly.
What did you have done?
I love medical horror stories.
Well, it's called a urolift, as in U-R-O, not E-U-R-O. And what they do is they go in and open up your urethra by putting in little stents. So you know how they put stents in your veins when you have a heart attack?
Uh-huh.
Well, they put it in your urethra. So I'm thinking, when you get a prostate exam, you know, what happens? You bend over, the doctor finger fucks you, you know, it's over. So I thought that your prostate was accessed through your ass. But no, no, it's accessed through the head of your penis.
Oh.
And they gave me no anesthesia, nothing. And he tells me, this might be uncomfortable. And you know, when they say that, you know you're in for it, right?
Wow.
So he sticks this tube up my dick and into my urethra, and he starts stapling. It's like he's stapling things, and I can feel it. And it really hurt. So afterward, I was in a lot of pain, and I came home, and I couldn't pee. And then when I did start peeing, blood was coming out, which he told me would happen. But I freaked out and went to the emergency room anyhow. So I get to the emergency room, and I had like a, you know, one of my hysterical things. I can't pee. I'm going to die. You got to put it in a catheter right now. Put it in a catheter. And they said, well, you really don't need one. You don't have that much urine. I said, but I can't pee. He made a mistake. He screwed it up. You got to get it out. So they put in a catheter, and this is funny. You know, the male nurses did not want to do it. They just did not want to do it. I think one of them came in and took a look at my dick, which was like bruised and swollen, and it was just a mess. And I think it just was too much for him. So he went and got a woman nurse, and she was like, you know, she was like right on it. You know, she wasn't, I guess it's because of the guys think, oh my God, I can't imagine what that feels like.
It's kind of gay. So right? I touched another man's dick.
Your doctor's like, I'm not going to help you with that. That would be gay.
You know, and that's the other thing. And you know, the straight guys, they always think we're after their dicks. You know what I mean?
You're in a hospital bed and you're trying to save the functionality of a very vital organ in your body, and the nurse is looking at you like screaming. They need to get a new job.
Yeah, really. But that guy did give me morphine to shut me up, so he's not horrible.
Maybe you said something to piss him off in your morphine induced high.
No, he took a look and got all the weak need. but you know, they think we're after their dicks all the time. Why? When you go to the locker room, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I, like, when I was a kid in school, I forced myself never to look down because, you know, I was gay and I didn't want to have anybody say anything about it. Well, the straight guys are constantly checking each other's dicks out. I mean, you know what I'm talking about in the locker room at the gym?
Them, having whole discussions about them, all sorts of stuff.
Well, part of it is like they've done studies about this, and I guess it's called, there was a show that we did called Cacocracy. And this was that the men in a sports team are emboldened by knowing that the star athlete on the team,
the captain of the team
or the, you know, important players have big dicks.
Yes.
Even if they don't actually have big dicks, the idea of having big dicks gets them.
They
inspired.
All rally around it.
Yeah.
Wow. That is interesting.
This is not even gay or straight. Yeah. This is just a male human
behavior.
And also,
too, like, pretty much all people like dicks for the most part. Even like when you watch porn, guys are just like, you know, they're watching that dick go in. They're turned on. And, you know, the money shot when they come, that's exciting for everybody's excited by that.
Yeah, except the woman who has to lie there and put up with it just to collect a few $100s. Yeah.
In heterosexual porn, a lot of the times the guy comes on the woman's face or because they want to watch it. They want to see the ejaculation. And if the ejaculate happens inside a person's body, whether it's a butthole or a vagina, it's not as lucrative in terms of adult films.
It's the money shot.
Literally,
yeah. That's the money shot. But you know, they I think that they think that we have like dicks, that our dicks come with like little pink ribbons tied around the balls and a cocktail umbrella hanging out the slit. You know, I think that they think our dicks are somehow inferior or something. But you know, it just bothers me because, first of all, I mean, we're gay. We see a lot of dicks. We don't need to go to the locker room to see dicks. We, if we're active, we see dicks all day, right? I mean, you can turn on the, you can turn on porn and look at dicks anytime you want to. So why will we be looking at their dicks?
I like to give people their desire for privacy. However, if somebody's very attractive and looking at me, I'm not going to be shying away from looking back at them.
Well, right. You're still young. I might have been that way at one point, but now I think they're looking at my crepey skin or something, you know?
They're gasping.
Gasping.
But I got to tell you, you know, the right now daddies are in, and even grandpa, sexy grandpas are in. And it's like, that. Like,
why?
I know, just because people, you know, part of it is, I think, you know, the AIDS crisis took away a whole generation of men and women that we could look up to in their later years. And I don't think we have that anymore. So, you know, in the past 20 years or so, there's been an interest in sexualizing, at least when it comes to older men's bodies on the internet. So we know, like, there was a phenomenon of the sexy Santa Claus that was like going around in the fashion world.
There's a porn star in Japan who's like 80. He's probably 90 by now or something like that, who appears in a lot of pornos and people love
his dick. And his dick cooperates.
You know, I'm not sure what's going on.
I don't know
on
what's
there.
Going on there. But like, even there's like physique models on Instagram. You can find there's thousands of them who have very lucrative careers as sex symbols in their 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Yeah, but they have, do they really look good, or do they look
like they look pretty good? You know, there's one guy actually in Wisconsin who's not, I'm talking to you on my phone, so I can't pull it up, but I'll share his profile with you. And he's like, he looks good, and he has like 33,000 followers. His profile says motivational speaker, which is code for, you know, sex worker.
And he might as well say massage.
He's a massage therapist. And he goes around and talks about being sexy and silver, and he's, you know, I'm not sure if he's gay or not, or he kind of soft pedals that, but it's like in the comments there are literally hundreds of people going, oh my god, you're so hot, daddy, grandpa, take me.
And well, why am I not finding these people? They don't ever find me
because you're in the ER getting stuff sucked in the dick. So what happened in the hospital?
Well, I ended up going back three times because all these blood clots were coming out, and I said isn't that going to go to my heart and lungs? Aren't I going to die? And they said, no, it's the blood clots there don't get into that arterial system or something. And then I got home and I thought they lied to me to get me out of there because I was complaining so much. Yeah. So I went back. I ended up going back. I went there three times. Robert was like, oh, my God, why did you do this? But the good news is now the pee comes right out. The bad news is I still get up seven times a night, and now I can't turn the fucking thing off. It's like now the spigot goes on and doesn't go off. Before it wouldn't go, you know, it was the back, it was the other way around.
Can't you clamp it?
You know, I try. I shake it and shake it and shake it. But every damn time I stick it back in my pants, it just something goes dribbling down my leg. And I think, ah, fuck. You know, when you get older, this will happen to you. It happens to all older guys, which is why I can't imagine why anyone would want an older guy. One of the many reasons.
And to pee.
Well, part of it is, too, you know, for some older people, wearing diapers is a good option. I know some seniors that I know wear diapers when they sleep so they can not worry about wetting the bed, you know? And when I was a kid, I wore diapers when I was 10 years old. And
you wore diapers when you were 10?
Yeah. Oh, so not wet the bed. I know.
My poor baby.
And it worked, you know? And you're not so worried about it, you know?
You know, I don't know if you've noticed, but at all the stores now, they have tons and tons of adult diapers. I mean, the baby boomer crowd has taken over Walgreens. You know, Walgreens used to have, I kid you not, the name of the aisle was the pain and rectal aisle. They actually had that sign, pain and rectal.
What? Pain and rectal?
At Walgreens used to have a sign, pain and rectal. You know how they had those signs around?
Yeah.
So we used to laugh about it in the 80s. So, but now that aisle, which is located in the same place the rectal aisle was. It has nothing but adult diapers, and there are ads for them on television. There's this one where this woman is like has on her diaper, and it has little pink flowers drawn on it, and she says, "I like to feel feminine and protected." Like, and I'm thinking, bitch, who's going to see your fucking diaper? You're supposed to wear it under your clothes. Which, really, well, I mean.
You know, women buy lingerie for themselves, so maybe she's buying this for herself, right?
A diaper? Yeah. A diaper for herself. Well, you know.
Medical stuff can be very arousing to people. I mean, it's like when my mom had a stroke and she was in the hospital, the guy that was helping her with a rehab was smoking hot. And I was, you know, there really concerned for my mom's life. But then this, you know, this hunk straight out of International Mail, like a gay porn star, come in and it's like, "Miss Furnos, I'm going to help you get up." And I'm just like, "Help me get up, honey."
Well, there's a whole like medical fetish thing going on. You know, there's a whole
world. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's people like that make a living from doing like medical porn, like putting catheters in each other. For years, we were fascinated by this one performer called Vicky Hooks. And Vicky was...
Pretending
to be an amputee, and so she would have like these fake like prosthetic arms put on, but then also too she would put in a catheter into herself, and she's a trans woman, and I believe she had a penis which she would kind of like blur out a little bit, you know, you could kind of still see what was going on there, but then she'd put catheters in, and she'd put on her stockings with these little like her fingers were clamps. Because she had prosthetic arms, but it was all fake, you know?
Well, what's that mean? It was real equipment, but she's not somebody who was an amputee.
Yes,
Everything else was real,
but like, this is her thing. And so, you know, and there's a whole business around that. And in fact, there was a medical fetish site that donated a bunch of products to the health system in the UK because they're like, they needed outfits.
You know, I saw that news. Yahoo always has news like that. Yeah, it was. That was really nice. I mean, you know, people just because they're sexually inclined and they're sexually active doesn't mean they're not nice, right?
Now, it wasn't a whole lot of stuff because they're like, we don't keep a lot of stuff on hand, but you know, because it's inventory. But we gave them what we could because they really wanted to help out with the pandemic.
Now, they posted on social media that they normally don't make political statements, but they felt compelled this week to speak up and say, when we, a tiny company set up to serve a small section of the kink community, find ourselves sought out as a last resort supplier for our national health service in a time of crisis, something is seriously wrong. In fact, it's scandalous. Let's be under no illusions. This is the result of a decade of chronic underfunding and cuts, which has left our national health system barely able to cope under normal circumstances, much less when faced with the onslaught of a global pandemic.
Wow.
It did not and should not have to be this way. So when it's all over, doctors, nurses, and other staff have done an amazing job. Let's not forget or forgive the ones who sent the NHS into this battle with inadequate armor and one hand tied behind its back.
Wow. I didn't see all that. That's powerful.
Yeah.
That is really powerful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where's my okay button? Okay. Cardi B's lost her marbles.
You know, I don't even know who she is. I see her name everywhere, and I've seen her on YouTube.
She's a reality TV star. She had a hit song, "I Like It Like That." I like it. She occupies the same space as contestants from RuPaul's Drag Race, but she's hugely, hugely successful as an entertainer, as a media personality. And she's very, very, very progressive. And she's been kind of obsessed about the coronavirus and her saying,
"Coronavirus! Shit is getting real! Woo!"
was turned into a song. And she's just going around very outspoken about our need for universal health care. She's been endorsing Bernie Sanders. She's been a very important voice in the progressive movement in the United States, even though she is very much a very campy, very urban
that's okay.
personality. And so this week she snapped. And she watched Tiger King on Netflix, which is the hit show right now.
Have you seen it?
Really? No.
It's really great.
No.
So Joe, it focuses on the stories of several exotic animal zookeepers in the United States, centered in Florida and Oklahoma. And mostly around this one guy named Joe Exotic, who ran for president.
Oh, I read about that. Yeah.
He ran for president in 2016, and he has been sentenced to jail for 22 years for allegedly trying to kill one of arch nemesis, Carol Baskin or Robbins? She's like the ice cream, but I can't remember her last name.
Baskins.
Carol Baskins. Anyways, Cardi B is like, Joe is innocent. Carol, I know you killed your husband, you dirty bitch. And it's like, I'm setting up a GoFundMe to get you out of jail. Joe, you will be free.
Doesn't he have a husband, this Joe?
Joe Hat was in polyamorous relationships with two allegedly heterosexual men. They said he seduced men on a regular basis with guns, meth, and large tigers.
The power of the pussy.
Power of the pussy, baby.
There you have it. Oh, my God.
And you think you've done outrageous things to try to get into somebody's pants?
Well, I haven't found anyone to try. And what am I going to try it with?
Listen, what am I going to try it with? There's even like the hookup apps like Scruff and Grindr, if you open them up, there's a giant warning saying like, stay home, do not hook up for sex. But of course, you know, what was it that did that song? This people are still having sex. This AIDS thing isn't working.
Yeah.
You remember that song?
It was all over.
Yeah, I remember the whole.
We were just talking about it the other day, but I didn't memorize the guy's name because he's.
That is Latour.
Latour, that's it.
People are still having sex. Lust keeps on lurking. Nothing makes them stop. This AIDS thing's not working.
People are still having sex. So, you know, this coronavirus thing isn't working and people are still hooking up for sex, even though literally the apps are begging them, please don't do this.
Are they really? Are people still doing that? I'm surprised. Well, I shouldn't be surprised. They did it during the early AIDS epidemic, too. So,
listen, you know, those dicks aren't going to suck themselves.
Well, you know, but little Louie's out of commission, and I have had both of my shoulders replaced because of arthritis, so I can't do much with my hand because, you know, it's connected to the bones, it's connected to my shoulder. And my mouth is constantly dry from all the medication I take. So I'm just done. You know, I'm just done. Like Jane Fonda said, we've closed up shop down there.
So, you know, probably like your energy and your connection to the universe is shifting right now. And so getting used to that there's a loss there, you know, and you have to give yourself space to mourn that and to transition into something new.
Well, I don't have any choice.
That was the
most beautiful way I've ever heard older male impotence described. I mean, that was really lovely. The metaphysical, I just think of it as like the dick's done. What else? You know, what's going to happen next?
Well, part of it is like, you know, in terms of my generation, I don't know, you were kind of caught in the middle of the AIDS crisis.
I was at the very, very beginning. I lived in Los Angeles and I had a partner and we'd been together 4 years and thought that we didn't have to worry about it. But shortly before we met, he had met a guy and he had picked it up and we didn't know it. So we had unsafe sex for 4 years. And I didn't catch it. I was never infected, miraculously.
Well, you may be one of those people with European descent who survived the Black Plague and may have a natural resistance to HIV.
I think it's because I'm a top.
That could be.
I think so. Yeah.
Well, have you considered now that you're in this position that maybe you should start bottoming?
No, I just that's something I can't stand. I'm not built that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. You know, for gay men, at least we can bottom, you know? And when you're older, it's like you could. Part of it is, I think, for a lot of, you know, queer seniors, because we sort of live in a very sex negative society or a society that shames people that are silver.
Silver, not silver. Don't they have just from in hair gel, for God's sakes?
Girl, yeah, I know, me too. So, but but part of it is like, I think, you know, for a lot of queer seniors are very sexually active. because we've sort of experienced what it's like to be discriminated or limited by our sexual or gender identity. So, you know, like Kate Bornstein, she's my friend, she's trans. She's still getting action and she's got all kinds of medical problems.
Really?
You know? And yeah, like all the queer seniors, with your exception of you, that I know.
Gee, thanks. That I'm glad to find this out.
Is they're having the time of their lives. Like, you know,
how do you have intimacy in other ways? Do you guys sleep together? Do you cuddle and kiss? And
no, we've been together a long time. Do you guys still?
Oh my God, that's the best part of the day. Literally.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I'm gonna have to have a talk.
I said that last night.
Yeah.
I said this is the best part of the day, and the most wonderful thing about being in prison is that at least, just like in Orange is the New Black, you get to be in prison with them.
And sometimes you have to lay down the rules because we sleep in separate beds, but we cuddle and stuff. And I'll say, okay, you can come into my bed and stuff like that, but you have to stop talking.
Impossible. I'm but see, then Mark wants to talk about things that he's interested in, and I, being a good listener, will listen. Mm. Have I ever told you?
He brings up things that are like, these are the things that are going to keep me up all night. When I go to bed, I want to be in that space where it's like, it's time to relax, to let the world melt away so I can go into my currency space.
At peace.
I can wake up refreshed. And so, you know, when you start talking about taxes and bills and electricity bills, you know, things that need to be paid, you know, it's very worrisome. And then you're up all night thinking about that. And then the next day, your day's ruined. So, this is a good reminder to remind folks, we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus. I want to thank everybody who's renewed recently or made a donation. It's made a world of difference to us.
Yeah, especially Javier, you know, and other people who have helped us survive. Because, you know, in terms of producing this show right now, where it's kind of like of a lot of people's window to the world. And I'm really glad to be able to talk to somebody like Louis Weisberg, who...
thank you.
You know, and Louis, you have a wonderful sense of humor. I think in terms of like your publishing career, you were behind three major gay, queer, LGBTQ news publications. The first one was Windy City Times. The second one was Chicago Free Press, and then the Wisconsin Gazette. And in your history in that,
and they all failed.
Well, you know, they nothing lasts forever. Everything changes, and you can always start them up again. The thing that I think is most fascinating is the most controversial thing you ever did in your entire journalism career was to get plastic surgery and then be photographed during that plastic surgery and put that as a major issue in the gay publication.
I was ahead of my time. I just, you know, it's like I got a toupee because I'm going bald. I'm really going bald. So I'm doing work on camera, and the head just doesn't look right. So I got this toupee, and people say to me, "I didn't know you had so much hair, or your hair was so long." And I just say, "Oh, it's a toupee." And then a friend of mine said, "Why do you tell people?" It's because there's no shame in it. You know, it's my hair. I bought it. I mean, it's on my head still, right? And I feel guilty taking credit for something like that. I mean, so I wanted people to know that it's okay to do it. It's okay. I mean, you know, guys buy a $3,000 whatever designer suit so they'll look good, and then they take it off and they look like shit. You know, save the money on the suit, go to the gym, get your eyes done, get some filler, you know? I mean, then you look good. The car sits in the driveway. This is you. Mm-hmm. You're going to take yourself everywhere you go. This is the face people are going to see. You relate to people by that. Until you get to know them, the first thing you see is their face. And I refuse to let my face get old. The body I can't control so much, but the face I have under control.
Well, you know, RuPaul is getting a lot of negative attention besides of her other issues. She's doing a video series teaching people how to be successful. And the advertisement for it is saying to go get a suit. Is the idea that if you want to make a lot of money, you got to look like you're making a lot of money. You got to dress for the part. Do you agree with that idea?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of things a lot of prejudices that are just built into our unconscious minds. Mm-hmm. It's like people who have really ethnic names, like, you know, like they sound Arabic, or they sound like, you know, Leticia Asha or something. You know, they don't get called in for interviews. people who are heavy don't get hired. People who are attractive get hired. I can't remember. It's been a long time since I wrote about it, but I do remember researching it. And people who are attractive, you know, and it's not the people who are doing the hiring aren't even aware of it. They just tend to hire that person over someone more qualified.
Well, and so shouldn't RuPaul change his name to Charles? You know, it's like, I mean,
Charles.
That's his RuPaul Charles is.
Is his last name.
Is his last name, but he could use it as a first name and have a more, you know, waspy sounding name, you know.
Right.
And so to me, it's like sometimes it's the limitations that are dealt with in life that define us. And, you know, telling people like change who you are in order to fit in. Is that really like being successful? I mean, you might bring in a little bit more money, but, you know, those suits ain't cheap.
You know what? You know, once you've got the success, then you can tell everybody to fuck themselves. That's the thing. I mean, I think you equip yourself. If you're going into battle, you equip yourself with the most powerful weaponry and the best techniques and battle strategy that you can. But once you've conquered, then you can take off those fatigues and let it hang, you know.
But you can dress up in a suit for a job interview, and I think if you have you're in a position to influence people's perception of you by the way you dress, by all means do so, you know. Like in terms of Cooking with Drag Queens, which is our other project that's very popular, Mark and I very early on decided it's like that what we wore in hosting a cooking show with drag queens was just as important as anything else. And we put a lot of time and energy and money into, you know, even if it's male clothes that held up standing next to a drag queen who, you know, won RuPaul's Drag Race. And so for us, it's like it was really important to have, you know, and the one rule that we always had with what we wore is it has to make us laugh. Just the object wonderful. Itself. Like if you're looking at the object, you have to laugh, you know? And if it didn't make us laugh, we didn't wear it. We didn't buy it. Like, is this sexy? Does this look good? Does this look like it'll hold up? And does it make us laugh?
Mm-hmm. I can dig it. Sure.
And for me, I think for a lot of people when they dress up, you know, they don't take into consider, they're always worried about money or being accepted, but they never think about humor in their fashion.
Yeah. I think we see more of it now than we used to. I think that some of the queer magazines like Out and what's that other one in? What is the other? I get them, but I don't even know the titles of them.
Out Magazine.
Advocate.
And the Advocate.
Do they even publish anymore, though?
No, they don't anymore.
No, yeah. No. No, there's these, they're like fashion magazines, and they're very gender fluid.
International Mail.
No, it's like, oh, shit. Maybe it's just Out. There are two of them, though. I know we get them. Robert, what are those magazines we get every month? Those gay magazines with the...
Robert!
What is it?
What?
Okay, I guess it's Out.
What are they called? I don't know. It's in the bathroom. Let me go to the bathroom and get it.
Oh, God.
Right, no wonder Robert's closing the door on you. Wait a minute. So in your apartments, like, there's no way that you could just lock the door and lock your husband out.
No, but it isn't necessary because we don't fight. I mean, early on, he was born in England and he, his background is Irish. Yeah. And his background is Irish. And his father was, his mother was a war bride. His father was from Texas and he was in the Navy and he met. Oh my God. That was, in the '40s, our GIs who were overseas, you know, married women from other countries, and they brought them back. They were called war brides.
I knew quite a few growing up. Yeah. My mother's good friends with the war bride.
Yeah. There were a lot in those days. Mm-hmm. So, she came here and he spent most of his life here. He left there when he was eight, but that's where his family was. So that's where he went back to visit until everybody died. But, he has an Irish, I guess what you call it, stereotypical, you know how those stereotypes of Irish people getting angry and you see them in the movies and they're red faced.
Right, and you get your Irish up.
Yeah, get your Irish up. Exactly. They even have a word for it. But he used to do that, and I would just take him by the hand and take him in the other apartment and say, stay here until you calm down. And he would do it. So, you know, we just don't fight. And I don't really yell. I'm just annoying, you know? I don't have to yell. I don't need to raise my volume to get on people's nerves or to make my point. So he just doesn't do it anymore, you know? Yeah, do you guys still yell at each?
Yeah, of course.
Do you guys ever?
It's important. This is the thing about it is like, it's important to give people space to vocalize negative feelings, because if you don't do that, you're not able to grow as a person. And the day you stop growing, the day you stop learning is the day you start dying.
You know, you're right. You're right.
You know,
you're right. Well, we still talk about negative things. It's just that the yelling. I grew up in a household where my parents, they got divorced eventually, but they yelled at each other day and night. It was very traumatic. So I just can't live under the same roof with somebody
Well, Mark, you say that our relationship is relatively peaceful compared to other things in your family, or you were saying that like our household is, you know, there's a lot of, normally we get along.
Well, we get along, but also too is like, I think that, you know, part of it is those, you know, my parents would fight too, but my parents remain, and it was never really terrible fights, you know what I mean? But my parents stayed married until my dad died, whereas like your parents would fight and they ended up getting divorced. So when I'm yelling or something like that, or he's like whatever, then he's takes it is much more emotional about it than I am.
I would agree with that, sure.
But also too, he also is like Faust is the kind of person that leads me into getting like he'll say something and then all of a sudden like I'm the one that yelling. I like, why am I the one that's yelling? You're the one that started this. You know, because like, he's yelling at me for yelling. I'm like, you started yelling first. So I kind of like I had to. So mentally, I have to like note that in my head is like he's goading me into starting a fight. And so I have.
But you know, the problem with yelling is that when you're at that point where you're that emotional, you don't really have time. Your blood's boiling, and you don't really have the wherewithal to think it out and to have a meaningful kind of dialogue about it. That's the part I don't like. You just say a lot of really mean things that you don't even really necessarily mean about the other person, you know?
Well, and I think that toxic masculinity doesn't extend to you and your relationships with other men. And I think for, you know, men who are in relationships with other men, you know, sometimes it's really hard to talk about our feelings, especially when there's resentment and anger and it's hard to communicate with somebody.
I was raised in a psychiatrist's office, so it's easy for me, but for him, it's hard. He has that kind of thing where he's like, I don't like to think about things like that. I don't like to talk about things like that. So,
in terms of like this, crisis that we're facing as a nation, and you've covered God, you know, last time you were on the show was in 2008 and the big, hot debate was between Hillary and Barack Obama. Do you feel like as a nation that we're sort of going to change in any way as a result of this crisis, hopefully for the better? But I mean, yes. What do you make of all this?
Well, it reminds me that what's going on right now reminds me of the very early days of the AIDS epidemic. No one knew what it was. No one knew really exactly how it spread. Some people didn't get sick for years. Other people got sick and died in like, you know, 6 months. So it's like this big unknown. And also it's like AIDS in the sense that they tell us if we isolate, you know, we don't have to worry. Like they told us in the early 80s, you know, if you have safe sex, you don't have to worry. Actually, that was the late 80s. They told us that. But AIDS really profoundly changed our society in so many ways that people aren't aware of. They reap the benefits of it, you know, fast-tracking drugs, all the knowledge that was acquired about the immune system and virology. I mean, it changed a lot. It also changed how people thought about sex. And I see that with young people. I think the young people today are way, way less sexual than we were, much less prolific, that's for sure.
Younger people are less sexual than we were?
Yeah, I think
you are in a different generation than me. But because you know, you, well, I mean, you are a, Because it's like with Grindr now and Prep and all these things like that, I would think that it would be like over the top now compared to.
Well, I can look it up. I think that there are indications through surveys that in general, not about gay people, but in general, that that people are less sexual than they used to be. And I think we were so hypersexual, and I think that maybe in the gay male community, there's still an element of that, but I'm sure there is. In fact, I know that there is, because I know people are on Grindr all the time. But I think in general, society kind of changed. I guess maybe it's going back. But I think that this thing that's going on now is going to, it's bringing up a lot of things. Like Fausto, you were saying about the lack of adequate funding and organizing of our healthcare system. The fact that we have no healthcare system, it's bringing that up. It's forcing a huge, huge government investment. Now, the Republicans have said for years and years they don't believe in government programs and they don't believe in running up a deficit. And that's all they've done, starting with Ronald Reagan. They run up the deficit. You know, they and the Democrats have been the ones who end up paring back the programs, like Clinton and even Obama, just to prove, you know, that they weren't like that. They weren't, you know, the tax and spend liberal stuff. Well, they can't really say that anymore, can they?
They buy it. They've been saying it since Reagan, and they buy it. They continue to buy it.
But with a $2 trillion bailout and sending money directly to people's houses, and they're going to talk about universal health care as a socialist kind.
They can talk out of both sides of their mouth, and their followers will listen to it, and they will buy it. They will believe it, because when the face of the Republican Party really is about racism at this point in time, and when you're a racist, everything else, all your critical thinking gets shut down in so many different ways, and so you become part of this racist cult.
I totally agree with you. Racism is kind of
like the gateway drug to get them in, and once they're there, you're there for life. My mother, you know, my mother's a Republican. She's 95 years old. She says to me, she was born a Republican. She's going to die a Republican. Now, when she was a Republican and when her father was a Republican, her grandfather was a Republican, it's a different kind of party than what we have today.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
totally.
A much different party. And so you got all these people that, you know, and my mother's old, and she would never call herself a racist, but she, of course, has racist tendencies, I would say, and has definitely benefited from systematic racism in her life. And it's one of those things where it's like you'll never get them to leave the party. So you've got these older people that just have always believed in this kind of stuff and really thought that it was about small government and personal freedoms and that kind of stuff. Whereas, you know, in my mind, it's like this is the people that just like take all the money and give it to the rich. Like, and they use any means to do that.
You know, David Koch said once, I've read some really good books in the last year, really well-researched books about the rise of the income disparity. David Koch once said that the way that rich people were taxed and forced to pay for services that they don't use was as bad as the Nazis were to the Jews. He said he actually said that he felt as persecuted as the Jews in Nazi Germany because he didn't want those things. He didn't need those things. Why should he give all this money? You know, let those people go get it themselves, you know? And that's like, that, to me, that's the Republican Party today. But now, what we're seeing now is that that this is going to change all that because people can't work. And if people can't work, then the whole economy falls apart. If people don't spend we really go down the drain. So now they're starting, I think this is going to make people realize the workers are really an important part of this. You know, because they talk about the Republican Party, the takers and the makers, and the fucking takers are the people, the CEOs. I mean, they're the people on top are the ones who get all the money and, you know, buy all the stock, take government incentives to buy stock back, you know, and enrich themselves further. But it's the people that are doing the job and the people who set up their organization, they're the ones who are the makers. I think it's the rich who are the takers. And I think people are going to start seeing that now more. I hope.
I don't know. It's hard because they control the media and we're inundated by, you know, we're micro-targeted through Facebook and Twitter and our social media. They know exactly who these people are. It's like I have brothers. They live in a bubble. Everything that comes in front of them, everything that they see is part of this bubble. And it's like I don't see that changing in the foreseeable future. I mean, it's going to take a catastrophe, and maybe the likes of a catastrophe that we're going to have here, you know, we'll have maybe 100,000 deaths, I think, from this. Maybe they're saying 200,000 deaths from the COVID-19. And I don't know if that would even be enough to change, you know, out of 300 million Americans, if that's enough to change people's idea on getting health care. And the weird thing is you know, the people, there's so many people that want to, like, a nationalized health care system. When they were polling people coming out of the polling booth saying, like, what, who, you like, are you in favor of this? And they're all like, it was like 60-70% of the people were for it.
Up to 80%
up to 80% in some polls. And they're like, well, who did you vote for? And they're like, well, Joe Biden. And it's like, because they, in their mind, they kind of think that Joe Biden is for it. And it's like, he's not for it.
Well, he's literally said if he, and part of this is stemming from this idea that's a very conservative idea, which is that the government needs to be abolished or shrunken down into a microscopic entity.
But now we see now we see how it cannot possibly be. And they've acknowledged that and put that package. I mean, it was you know, their karma came down. They had to vote for that. But everyone can see
they don't believe the government. The Republicans don't believe in smaller government. They don't believe in taking the tax money and giving it to their friends.
But see, the devil's going to do what the devil's going to do, and the haters are going to hate. What to me is more about people that we personally know who are progressives, who are registered Democrats, who are very much against a national healthcare system. That to me is more worrisome or frustrating, because they're making the argument that, you know, the national healthcare system could be run by someone like Trump, and that's why we shouldn't have it.
Well, if he was going to run it, they'd have a point.
Another person makes the point is, like, you know, if wealthy, rich people like David Geffen, we'll get to him in a second here. If he were dependent on our national healthcare system, if the Koch brothers were dependent on our national healthcare system, as we were, as the richest and the poorest both had to rely on the same system, you better believe that system would be pretty damn good, right? Mm-hmm. And in Europe, have national healthcare system, rich people still have private insurance. They still get Botox and facelifts and all kinds of crazy shit. They still got that stuff.
Yeah, and then they go to private. I think Biden's trying to position himself to get moderate voters. What the Republicans are going to do, they're going to, if Sanders is the nominee, it's going to be socialist, communist. I mean, he went to Moscow on his honeymoon or something. They're going to bring up, I mean, they're going to just slaughter him. I mean, I get that Biden is, like, old fashioned and he's too old. They're all too old, frankly. But but, you know, he's thinking, you know, he's thinking, I'm going to shore up Obamacare, let the unions have their health care. I see it as a process. Obamacare, even Obama said privately, I believe, that this is a first step toward national health care. But Americans are terrified of big change. I don't know. It's like
a lot of people were making the argument against marriage equality for same sex
couples. Oh, yeah.
And that similar. Including Hillary Clinton was saying that this is something that has to be done gradually.
Incrementally.
Yeah. And then what happened was, the Windsor, the Supreme Court case blindsided the Democratic Party, and then they were forced to sort of play catch up overnight. And marriage equality.
But, there was a lot of incremental stuff going on between one of the arguments for marriage equality when the Supreme Court made the decision was that, you know, gays are out of the closet now and they're part of our lives and it's not, you know, it's not like society has changed. In fact, Kennedy said that society has changed. Its attitudes have changed. And there was a lot that went on. And, you know, it's always good to have people like pushing, like Sanders, like pushing for things like that. But it's always also good to have somebody who gets people to, ease into it. I don't think to be honest with you, I don't think that either Biden or Sanders are together enough at their age to be president, but, you know, that's hard to argue when they're running against Donald Trump.
Well, they're your age, right? Or no, they're like 10 years older than you.
Oh my God, they're like, and Sanders is like 78. He's like 10 years older than
I am. I can't 79? Even imagine.
No, he's 77. And Trump is like 74. The one exception, and the candidate that I really favored, or who I favored, was Elizabeth Warren, because even though she's 70, she is so together. She's so quick. She looks young. She's vital. You know, she's an amazing, really an amazing
person.
Why
do you feel like she didn't resonate with people?
I think it was sexism. I really think that it's because people, you know, straight guys are, and my brother-in-law, who is obviously he's straight because he's married to my sister, I assume, he voted for Hillary Clinton. They live in California, and you know, they're liberal, but he said that he just didn't like Hillary Clinton. And I said, why? He said, there's just something about her voice.
That's
the clue. There was a news station out there that they would get all these like letters written to them about these about the women anchors of reporting. It's like, I don't like their voice, and they finally just be like, listen, we get so many letters about the voices on the women, but never about the voices of the men, that we stopped addressing this all together, and basically you can go fuck yourself.
So let's talk about David Geffen and his yacht.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
David Geffen, since he posted this on Instagram, he's deleted it. But he wrote on Instagram that taking a aerial drone photo of his yacht and wrote, sunset last night, isolated in the Grenadines, avoiding the virus. I'm hoping everyone is staying safe. Lewis, how many people does it take to run a yacht that costs $500,000? Half a billion dollars, excuse me.
It's half a billion?
590 million.
Oh, my God. I mean, you know, seriously, this sounds very reactive, and I don't think that people should. I don't think that people should have that much money. It's immoral. It really is immoral. I mean, we have people starving all over the world. We have people dying all over the world. We have so much misery. To give one person that much money, to give like whatever it is, 2,000 people in the United States that much money, is obscene. I mean, you know, it's just Our whatever system of government we have is just wrong. That should never happen.
Meghan McCain, the Republican conservative person, my father, Meghan McCain, she wrote on Twitter, David Geffen is worth $8 billion. For God's sake, help this country get ventilators, our health workers' masks, and the medical supplies they need.
Why is she asking a billionaire for this stuff? Why is she not asking our government for this stuff? It's like, why do we have a government if they don't do shit like this?
Well, the government should be taxing him at an appropriate rate. I mean, you know, in my income level, I pay like between state and local 30% close to, you know, with everything is taken out. You know, I'm on Social Security now. I paid into Social Security, and now I'm still have to pay into Social Security. The work that I do on the side, the income I make, I still have to pay into Social Security, even though I won't get anything out of it. And my Social Security is taxed. I pay taxes on my. So you know, when he's got $590 million boat, and you know, I'm very happy just being an average person. I don't want all that shit. In fact, I really don't want all that shit. I mean, it's just like, I would be embarrassed to be, wouldn't you? Seriously.
I would like to have enough money to get Botox at least, like RuPaul does. So when I cry, honey, you have to check for the side.
you have to know how to shop.
Oh, really? You know how to get it for like really cheap?
Well, you know, like the place where I go, you get a birthday discount, you refer a friend, you get a discount, you get credits.
Good.
You sign up for these things and you get credits every time. And you know, I get these things on an email saying, you know, you're entitled to 10 units of Botox because your bonus points and everything. So, I mean, and they have Botox parties. They don't do it so much anymore, but they have these specials where they invite their favorite clients in and they do it like 20-30% off for the people who are there. I mean, you got to be, it's almost like a little subculture and you have to be a part of it. It's me and all the Republican women in the rich suburbs. It's funny. I go to these things. I'm like the only guy there, and all these Republican women in the suburbs, we're the only people who go to these things.
It is interesting. Like a lot of gay men intersect with rich Republican women in certain fashion and, you know, in cosmetology.
You're right. You are so right. I never thought of that, but that's a thesis.
Well, part of it is like the rich. I mean, I'm friends. I will say this through work, my other side job, with some of the world's wealthiest women. Like the, you know, and part of me is like, I try to gently bring up, like, can you be a little bit more ethical kind of stuff? But they're not interested in hearing that, you know, in order for me to have that like friendship, it has to be sort of politically neutral.
Right.
They're not asking those questions. They're not inviting me to share my opinion on these issues with them to inform them of their own opinions.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, you have to just. I used to fly a lot, and when I would fly alone, I would always sit next to somebody who I thought looked like a redneck, and I would talk to them because I wanted to know really where they got their information and what they were thinking. And I talked to so many people who were really nice. I mean, at least on the surface, on a plane ride, they were nice, and they seemed like they really believed these lies that had been fed to them. They really actually believed it, and it's not like working with your brain. It's like their brains are possessed or something, you know. And they just
I think our brains are possessed by stuff too. I mean, part of it is that it's more obvious to see it from the outside than it is to see. Right. And for me, I'm always like, please persuade me into changing my opinion if you think that what I am saying is somehow misguided or wrong. But
I'm like that too.
But then, you know, of course, I start, you know, because we do this podcast and we have thousands of people listening to it. They don't want to comment on social media publicly. They want to comment on me privately, or they want to like have me engage directly with them one-on-one. And the problem with that is like, I just don't have the time to get into circular logical arguments with people.
And
they're literally, I said, look, I answered your question. It's kind of like when a kid wants to, you know, I don't know if you observe children asking their parents to, you know, go get ice cream or something, and the parents answered no, and so the kids continue to try to negotiate with their parents, and the correct answer is, look, I already answered your question, let's move on. But I think in human beings, like when we don't get the answer that we want from somebody, we'll continue to try to like approach that argument from a different angle. And so I'm having these anti Medicare for all people targeting me. These are friends of ours, people that you and I know. And they're furious with me because I said that, you know, one woman, and this was in Time Magazine, she had $34,000 bill for just having coronavirus in the hospital.
I saw that.
And then you're just like, and I'm like, look, go argue with Time Magazine. Go argue with your representative politicians. Why are you taking it up with me? You know, and I know you, and you know, you've spent at least three decades working for gay publications in one shape or another as the editor. And I imagine that you had those kind of arguments through the AIDS crisis, through September 11th. And now, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And how did you handle all that?
Well, you know, I would often we run stories that didn't resonate with people in the community, or write editorial opinions that people didn't like. Like, I don't know if you remember, this is just the first one that comes to mind. There is along the lakefront, there's there's an area that's roped off to people.
In Chicago, the bird sanctuary.
Yeah. Yeah. The bird sanctuary, the migrating hedge, birds.
The people call it.
Right. The magic hedge. Exactly.
It's a good cruising spot for gay men.
Right. And I wrote
that.
And I wrote that, you know, that gay men, you know, that we worked so hard all these years to get, you know, for the freedom to, you know, run a hotel room together or not have to hide ourselves and this was back when it was still not great. I mean, but it was better than it was in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And, you know, we've done all this work. And then you go and do something like this, and you're not even thinking of these poor birds. I mean, these birds are endangered. This is their mind. They've been doing this for a billion years or whatever. And it just felt so petty and selfish of them to do that there when they could go anywhere else, you know? or even just to another park. They could go anywhere. They had so many choices. But people got really angry with me.
That is like sex negative, and how did you react? Yes. Deal with the reaction to that?
You know, I got called sex negative a lot for a lot of reasons, which, and I wasn't at all.
And your tell me about it.
No, in fact, I don't think I've ever told you this, but when I was in graduate school in Los Angeles, I have a master's degree from the University of Southern California in English Lit, and I was in a PhD program, but I didn't finish the PhD. Anyhow, I was a teaching assistant at USC, and on the side, I was a hooker. I worked for this escort service for about a year. It was easy money, you know.
And you starved to death. I couldn't help it. Sorry.
and little Louis was like, on his mark then. He was good in those days, man. He could,
you wore him out.
He could get it up and, yeah, probably. But I'm not sex negative at all, is the point I'm trying to make. I mean, I went to bathhouses. I've done all that. I just think that people in general who've been oppressed, they tend to react to anything that seems the least bit threatening about what they've been oppressed about to be a form of oppression. And, and you know, that isn't necessarily, and I understand the psychological mechanism, don't you?
Part of it is like, look, you know, there's something really wonderful to have endangered species surrounding you while you're cruising for sex. I mean, that's the whole point of Tiger King. You know, nature is beautiful. Why wouldn't you not want to get it on sexually with nature surrounding you? But at the same time, it's like there are places that you should respect, and I think a rare animal sanctuary is one place you definitely don't want to be having sex.
No,
but there's I mean I can't even tell you how many loads that place, I mean, they do patrol it, but there's probably, so it's not just that sanctuary though, it's the whole area around it too. It's all the cars, and I think that's part of the reason why, you know, cut out the you can't go to the lakefront.
She shut down the lake.
I'm sure everybody's thinking about like all the people walking, all the people going there, but there's a lot of people that they go to the cars and they just go into each other's cars and they have sex in their cars nearby sanctuary too. And so I think that's part of the reason why they shut all that down as well, is because people were still going and having sex. I've got a friend out in the burbs, and you know, she's like, all these guys, you know, they want to go out on dates with me, and you know, and I'm just kind of like, aren't you guys self-isolating? And she's just like, well, no.
Yeah. Well, you know, at my age and with my, and have been through what I've and seen what I've seen, I don't take it lightly at all. But you know, the bird sanctuary thing, it's like, it just felt like a kind of selfishness to me. You know, if people are there, the birds won't land there, and then they don't get to have another spot for a very long time, you know?
Well, I think that's the issue here is that, you know, a normal journalist or an entertainer that speaks to a general audience isn't going to have this difficult situation where they have to point out the shortcomings of their own community. And I think for us and for you and for a lot of our friends, and I think this is one thing, the problem that I have with younger people who are in LGBT journalism is they don't understand that sooner or later they're going to have to tell their audience that they're wrong about something. And when they do, they're going to hate themselves for either silencing themselves, or they're going to feel like it's sacrificing their careers. And it's a difficult place to be. To telling people, like, I've stood on a stage where an audience of probably 30,000 people were acting really fucked up because they wanted to see Salt and Peppa. And back then, the girls, I was introducing the girls from RuPaul's Drag Race, and they were like, fuck no, we don't care about this. We want Salt and Peppa. And I just stood to the audience.
I remember
getting booed you were there, actually.
I remember Salt and Peppa thing. Yeah.
And Mark and I were hosting Milwaukee Pride Fest, and I was just there trying to calm the audience down or try to be humorous with them. And I just let it slip. I said, listen, if you're not nice to these drag queens, this show, Salt and Pepper are going back home.
I don't have to bring them out on stage.
And they were like, they thought I was being serious. And they're like, boo, Fausto, boo. And it's a difficult place to be when you are talking to your own community in any kind of entertainment, news, or journalism. Sooner or later, you're going to butt heads with the people that you want to reach.
That's true. And if you're doing your job right, that will happen. And that's kind of the reason, like you asked a little while ago, why I did the story about someone in the operating room when I was having cosmetic surgery. It's because I wanted people, I thought it was, there was nothing wrong with it and it was fine. And it actually made me feel better. I was turning 50. I was right before I turned 50. It gave me a lift. So, pun not intended. I know that when you live in the public, that's going to happen. But if you're doing it right, it has to happen, you know.
And don't ever stop, you know.
No, never.
Lewis, it's so good talking to you. I hope that your stand-up career blossoms when people can go back into clubs and hang out with each other.
You do an open mic, like they have virtual ones now. Everything's on Zoom and, you know, live shows everywhere on the internet, you know?
Well, I just ordered equipment to do that, so we'll see how it goes.
Well, let me know. I'll share it with our friends and
I will absolutely. By the way, yeah. Okay. Well, it's really great talking to you. I wish it was in person because I really miss you guys.
We'll do this again. You know, one day we will see each other in person.
We will be free again.
And we will be
someday
free.
We'll be together.
Somewhere, sometime.
Exactly. All right. I love you guys. Take care.
Take care, Lewis.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Lewis lives in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You can find out more about him at WisconsinGazette.com. It's back in business, baby.
You know, the story of Lewis Weisberg on the operating room table being photographed and then running in the gay publication was extremely controversial.
Everybody was talking about it. They're like, oh my God, can you believe this is happening?
Yeah. And part of it is, I think
it was late 90s, early 2000s, right?
It was a step forward for queer publications to sort of claim or name the idea that we're a population that gets a lot of work done on our faces and bodies. And at that time period, there was not a lot of visibility on, for example, medical procedures for trans people, or that a lot of gay men, as they age, and women too, get a lot of work done on their faces. Mm-hmm. And part of it is because, you know, we're always being denied our ability to express our sexuality or our gender identity throughout the course of our lives. And so when we get in a position where we can say, you know what, I'm going to get a little Botox, I'm going to get a facelift or something, because I want to, we're going to do it. Yeah. And so this article was, you know, covered and talked about and people were like just taking sides against it. And now in this day and age, it seems very tame by comparison. But my friend Jason Smith, who was in the room, he was taking the pictures and they literally sliced his face open. Mm-hmm. And Jason almost passed out.
Yeah, he said he wasn't really prepared for it. He didn't really. He just thought it was going to be like a little incision, little tuck here. Just like, no, they basically like cut his whole face off and put it back on or something like that.
Yeah, and so that was really intense. And I love being able to share the stories.
And about the age I am now, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. You could do it now.
You think?
Well, if you had the money.
I don't think I don't know. I'm at the age that if I went in and asked for a facelift, they probably would say you're not there yet.
I wonder how many people are going to use their government stimulus check to get facial work done. I mean, for us, it's like right now I'm just trying to figure out, are we going to go vegan to save money? Probably. We're dimming the lights. You know, we're trying everything that we can do to try to save money, just to survive. And it is, you know, I never thought I'd be podcasting from the apocalypse, but here we are.
Yeah. It's funny because I think we used to say, like, we used to joke, we'll be podcasting, you know, when the apocalypse happens. And, you know, it's not the end of the world. The shelter in place now is lasting at least until the end of April. So you're not going to get out of the house really till May, most likely, unless things drastically change. But, you know, we're all in this together. We are fighting this disease. We're all heroes. We are conquerors. We're going to conquer this, and we're going to go on. Life will change. It'll be different. It'll be hard. We're going to lose some people that are very near and dear to us. And like Fausta's family just lost Terrence McNally, playwright, author, at age 81 mm-hmm. from coronavirus. He was older and did have some cardiopulmonary complications, so he was very vulnerable. So a lot of people, and especially we've learned in this past few weeks in these podcasts, is that a lot of LGBT people are particularly at risk for getting the coronavirus. So we really, if you're queer, self-isolate, become a hermit, crawl into that shell, and don't come back out until Pride, okay? And we can fly those rainbow flags.
But I'm so horny.
Listen, hump the couch, do whatever it takes. You know, and listen, maybe you're self-isolating for 14 days and you have a friend who's down the hallway or across the street, and I'm not saying that this is the right thing to do because you're not supposed to do it, but maybe you find yourself a fuck buddy and just the two of you do it. I don't know. Not good medical advice. But I'm just saying, like, listen, it's about harm reduction,
sure,
right?
Sure.
It's about harm reduction. If you've been at home for 2 weeks, they've
don't
been
suck
at home for
10
weeks,
dicks, suck 5 dicks.
Yeah, you know?
Suck 2 dicks.
Every dick that you don't suck might be a life saved.
Yeah, if by not sucking dick save lives. Mm. Hey, listen, you know what? It's okay to make mistakes. And together, we're going to get through this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and part of it is, too, don't lose your sense of humor. Don't, you know, if you can talk about other things other than coronavirus. Mm-hmm. I know it's so exciting. And, you know, and I think that's part of the appeal right
now. Everybody's talking about her. She's the hot new thing.
Coronavirus. Who knew that drag queen would be so popular? Mm. Who knew she was going to win RuPaul's Drag Race season 12?
Wow.
You know, all those queens, they're not getting any gigs.
They will someday.
One day they will, but, you know, there might not be a season 13.
I saw...
Because they're not going to be able to film it.
Somebody commented on Facebook saying, yeah, that, oh, they're sorry about season 12 queens not getting any gigs or no whatever. And Raja, who won season 3, she chimed in. She's just like... Forget about it. It's like they're going to be just fine. I came to the premiere party when I won my season. I came to the premiere party at Mickey's and performed, and she's like, nobody gave a shit. Like back then, you know, and now she's got a stellar career, I would imagine. So it's they're not going to do okay right now, but who among us are? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's like they'll get their time. We'll all get our glory in the sun.
So the question is, like, who are people not giving a shit about right now that in the future they will give a shit about? Or who are people that are not being paid attention to or listened to that deserve to be heard? Mm-hmm. Think about that. And because everybody's, you know, you, the media right now, a lot of people are creating talk shows and streaming stuff on social media. Think about who is not being heard, because you know what? You had my opinion on everything, every topic from noon and night till morning. And for me, it's like, it's about giving attention and opportunity to people who have not been heard. That's what Feast of Fun is about. And I know that some people imitate and copy stuff we do. So I hope that you're copying that. You know, if you're listening to this podcast, you're like, what is their secret? Our secret is to care about people who are not being cared about.
They're cared about by some people.
That is at the core of what we do is to listen to the people who are marginalized. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that and do it in a way that is successful and entertaining, and sometimes we fail at being successful, we fail at being entertaining, but we try and you're only as good as your last podcast.
Well, I think also too, you know, marginalized people who aren't in the mainstream, they're more apt to take risks on what they're going to say and what they're going to do. It's like you can call like an A-list celebrity, but everything that's going to come from them is just going to be stuff you've already heard before, and it's just not going to be, I don't know, it's not going to be necessarily entertaining.
Well, I also noticed that a lot of A-list celebrities right now, as they're isolated at home, are very like leery about doing interviews or putting anything out there. And I mean, someone like David Geffen, you know, that's tone deaf. To the point that, like, he comes across as Mr. Smithers on The Simpsons, cackling at people's like pleas for help.
It's let them eat cake.
It's
almost designed to infuriate us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sure. He's just like, I'm so rich. Let me just piss off a few million people.
Remember when he was in a secret marriage with Keanu Reeves?
Well, that was the rumor, wasn't it?
That was the rumor. It was never disproven, though. But Keanu Reeves is like, I'm glad I'm not fucking that anymore.
But I'm glad to have, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars.
That's right, baby. Hey, listen, folks, if you have listened to Feast of Fun, if you love what we do, check it out. We're on Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun. We're posting our new episode with Disasterina.
Oh, my God. You guys are going to love it. If you fall in love with her on Boulay Brothers, Dragula season 2, you're going to fall in love with her even more. She's so fun. She's so charming.
And it's great. We got to see a different side of Disasterina as one of the few heterosexual drag queens.
Mostly heterosexual.
Mostly.
Is that what she said, mostly? Or is that how she...
I'm not sure what the, you know, I'm sure she's willing to negotiate.
Married to a lovely, lovely woman, Ave Rose, who was on the one and only season of steampunk. So she was a great creator and maker on that show, and she did very well.
I would consider her the winner of that season, even though she didn't technically win. Yeah. But she's definitely the most memorable person.
We're gonna get hurried on to talk about that.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully we can get them back on when the show on Cooking with Drag Queen launches, because, you know, Ave Rose, I'm a huge fan of her art and work, and she's somebody that I really adore. And I love everything she has to say. We deeply love, Disasterina as well. And they're some of the, you know, it's broken my heart that it's taken this long to bring out the show. But I'm glad that in this time of crisis, a flower blossoms in the desert.
Yes, yes, yes. It's one of our editor, who's done an amazing job, has just been super busy with so many projects because she's so sought after. But, you know, the coronavirus has freed up her schedule a little bit.
All it took was a pandemic and a catastrophe to make Cooking Drag Queens come back to life again.
I want to remind folks, if they want to support us, the best way is to become a Plus member, but you also can join us at Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun, or make a one-time donation at feastoffun.com/donate, or you can send a little Venmo payment to @feastoffun.
American Express will do nicely, thank you.
We accept cryptocurrency.
Let me loosen up your collar.
If you want to mail cash, you can also mail us cash at 5315 North Clark Street, number 242, Chicago, Illinois, 60640. Or a check, a cashier. If you want to be anonymous, get a cashier's check and just send that. And you could listen, if you're a rich oligarch, you can just get a cashier's check for $1 million and send it to us, and we'll be podcasting for a long time.
Let me loosen up your collar. Tell me, you want me to talk about cooking with drag queens again?
Yes.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.